All right, we are in managed language world. Who are you?
I am Luca Bolognese. I am a GPM for a bunch of managed languages, in particular C#, VisualBasic.net, and F#. Should I look in there, right?
No, you look at me. The camera... Yeah, okay. We don't really have talking cameras yet. They're coming.
Okay.
The AI is not ready.
All right.
So those are three very different languages. So let's take us through them. I mean, how do you, you know, when Anders comes up with a new thing, or, you know, Paul Vick, when he was on VB, for example, come up with a new sort of mechanism or feature, how did you justify, you know, put it in this language, not in this language?
So first of all, things are a bit different now than they were before. Okay. Right now, the strategy of how we are doing things between... our two flagship languages, at least, which are C# and VB.NET, is we are doing what we call co-evolution. What that means is that in the future, you won't see any big feature to be in just one language and not in the other.
Okay.
If we do something, if a significant feature, some kind of an important feature, it will be in both of them.
Okay.
So, which is different from the past. In the past, we had plenty of things like XML literals in Visual Basic or other things like iterators in C# that were specific of each language. And every time we did that, we thought that we were helping by differentiating those two languages. Mm. But the truth is that people on both sides of this got all upset. Because they couldn't use a feature or the other. And so what we decided to do is to co-evolve those two languages together.
Okay.
I can talk more about that if you care, of how we are going about it.
That would be interesting. But I would, you know, I'd ask, you know, in some sense, the syntax with which a developer will, you know, express his or her intent. I mean, usually you pick a programming language because you're trying to solve a problem, right? So I'm going to choose a functional language if I want to not really have to worry too much about concurrency, or if, you know, I'm doing a lot of mathematical programming. I wouldn't choose C# necessarily in that particular case. So I shouldn't say concurrency. I should talk about, like, math. But my point is the VB guys and girls were used to the sort of late-bound language and kind of loosely typed in some sense.
Yeah, we thought of that too. Meaning
exactly.
That...
Exactly. And that was wrong?
No, not that was wrong. It was very true in the past that the two customer bases between C# and VB were indeed very different. Mm. And the VB guys, many of them at that point in time came from a VB6 background. Many of the C# guys came from a C++ background or a Java background. And so the two customer bases were different.
Okay.
What we are seeing more and more, which is kind of what triggers our change of strategy, if you wish, is that those two customer bases are very much overlapping now.
Interesting.
When we talk to people, it is still true that you have, they come like this way, right? They are not completely overlapped yet, but they are getting very close. And so it doesn't make sense for us to target one part of the tail or the other part of the tail, where the majority of people are building very similar application and doing similar things. Mm. So what we decided instead is to target this middle part, which is where we think, at least, most of our programmers live. And that middle ground is not really different between C# and VB, or not in an appreciable way, at least.
Interesting.
So that's where we are. And we are going all... on with this. We are also doing other things. For example, we are looking at if you in Dev 10, which is the upcoming release of Visual Studio, there are things that a particular customer base, like for example, the VB.NET customer base really, really wanted, like statement lambdas or other things. So we are adding those to Visual Basic.NET as now to start unifying those languages. And now they are unified, we can go and co-evolve them.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, and we are doing all of that even inside the team. Now I'm managing both of them. And Anders is... Anders is kind of the language strategies for both of them, which doesn't mean that Anders is going to design the syntax for the VB features, but he's going to decide which features get into both.
Excellent.
So that we are still a separate design group because these two languages have a different flavor, and we need to continue respecting those syntactic flavors.
Absolutely.
But we want you to be able to pick what languages and not regret it. You know, not to have the choice. You know, I'm picking C sharp because it has more future than VB, or I'm picking VB because I'm more rad. No, you can pick whatever you want, and we are going to bring them, you know, along in a similar fashion.
Interesting. Now, what are some of the challenges in doing that? Because they're very very different languages. At least at one point they were. What are some of the technical challenges?
Oh, we have plenty of technical challenges. One of them is the depth, meaning right now there are differences in those languages. Mm. And so sometimes this prevents us from moving them forward at the same pace. And some of this depth, we want to fix it. For example, iterators in Visual Basic .NET, we really wanted to get those in, but we just couldn't. We didn't have enough time to do it. We got, you know, lambda expression, line continuation, plenty of things, but that one we couldn't. But we will do it as we move forward. So one thing is to bring them in a stage where they are indeed so similar as to allow us to co-evolve. Mm. And we are getting there. We are one or two releases away from that.
Okay.
And then there are real differences in the languages. For example, VB.NET has all those options, option strict on, option strict off, infer on, infer off. Okay. You need, when you design your feature, you need to consider all the combination of those options. In C Sharp, you don't have that.
Sure.
And there are, you know, there are, for example, dynamic. Mm. In VB, we can get away by reusing dim X as object, while in C Sharp we had to introduce a new keyword. So there are differences, but kind of you have the same power in both. You can do the same scenarios in both.
Excellent.
The syntax is a funny thing. People get all upset about syntax, and after a while that you, for example, last 2 weeks I've been writing just VB code, exclusively VB.NET code. After one day of getting a bit uncomfortable, you know, with the for having a different number and using the type at the end saying yes, after a while it gets natural and you start, and syntax is, it's not, people are very passionate about it, but I never fully understood the, yeah. Anyway, the fact that you can do the same thing is more important, in my opinion, than the syntax itself.
So let me ask you this, and that kind of brings up the question of, then why would I choose one language over the other?
Oh, that's the $1 million question. Mm-hmm. I mean, people always look for a simple answer to what is a very complex question.
Sure.
There are hundreds of axes and things. For example, what is your team more comfortable with? Do they come from a VB background? Mm-hmm. Do they come from a C Sharp background, or a C++ background, or from a Java background? There are all those different axes. What are the other projects in your company? Which language are they using? Mm-hmm. And plenty of these things. What we are trying to do is to make that choice less important. So that whatever you pick, you comfortably could move to the other one. Or in any way, it wouldn't prevent you from doing things.
Sure.
It's not like, oh, look, I picked VB or I picked C Sharp and now I'm screwed.
Exactly.
That's not going to happen.
Absolutely.
We're trying to de-emphasize that question, if you wish, to make it less important.
Does this mean, in some sense, I mean, when you guys created .NET, I mean, programming languages really were a thin wrapper over this huge base class library of functionality and, of course, the virtual machine underneath that. Are you thinking that perhaps the evolution of the languages in and of themselves may may slow down to help with the evolution, and then you just do most of the work at the library level.
Yeah, there is no question that we have been evolving languages at a very fast pace. And Anders has a way of talking about this, which is people get all upset about languages, but what you really have to learn is the libraries. And that's what takes time, and that's what really makes a good or a bad programmer, more than the knowledge of the nitty-gritty details, kind of the language.
Sure.
And it is rather possible that we will slow down a bit in terms of language innovation. We have been, with Link and with having all these functional things in the language, lambdas and these things. We start going to conferences and programmers are telling us that they are trying to figure out what we put in the language one version ago, which tells us that maybe it might be time that we slow down. Yeah. There are things though. It's always a trade-off, right? Because there are things on the horizon, like parallelism or asynchronous programmers, that are going to be extremely important. Mm. And you can get as far with libraries. You can get so far, but at a certain point, having language support for those concepts will really be important for people. Mm. And so we probably need to slow down a bit, but we don't want to die. We don't want to stop, right?
Well, yeah, you got to keep Anders interested, right?
Yeah, you never want to upset the man.
Totally. So then there's this other little language that's recently joined the fold, the Don Symes F#.
Indeed.
Which, of course, is a very different language than the other two guys, sort of a hybrid functional imperative language, if you will. Let's talk a little bit about that, and where does that fit into this evolutionary model?
Yeah, so I'm very excited about F# for people that are kind of... looking at my blog, they'll see plenty of F# stuff. They see VB stuff as well and C#, but plenty of F# stuff. And that has been... F# is very good. F# is... If you are an object-oriented programmer, learning F# would make you a better programmer. Mm. It's like learning a new way of thinking about your code. It's a different way of structuring your algorithm, of thinking of the way that you write code, really. And F# has been very good at that. I think it's opening up, even people, now I go on the web and plenty of the blogs that I see and people writing code, even if C# code or VB.NET code, it starts having that functional flavor to it that F# kind of brings along.
Sure.
And so we're really excited about that. F# is targeting right now more of the scientific community and the mathematical community, and it's extremely good in those domains. But just talking about it in those terms, it's a bit reductive. The way that I personally see it is a way of opening your mind to new ways of writing code.
Excellent.
And that's what it did for me. I mean, I've been a big time for more than 10 years, actually, almost 15, 20. I'm very old. But yeah, I've been an object-oriented programmer for my entire career until the past 2 or 3 years. And using F#, I really made a lot of fun. It made me a better programmer.
Excellent.
So,
very cool.
So yeah, it's a funny story about that. The program manager on F# was Luke Hoban, was before the program manager on C#, and the code is a very functional guy. From like I was an object oriented programmer, he's a functional programmer, right? And it would be writing this very functional code in C#, and we all would say, well, that's crazy Luke code, right? That's he writes code in a bizarre way. And now we all write that code. It's like, instead of him becoming us, we are becoming him. it's rather interesting.
That's great. I mean, we had Luke on Channel 9 back when
you got Luke
in the C# days. And we were talking about lambdas when they first introduced lambdas into C sharp. He was very excited.
Yeah, and in all those languages, it's very good for us because they cross-pollinate.
Yes.
You know, we have the dynamic languages, and now we have dynamic in C sharp, and we've got lambdas and things in F sharp, and they kind of gets their way into C sharp. And you can, immutability might be another one that kind of migrates between F sharp and VB.NET and C sharp. So it's a very good cross-pollination of thinking between all those languages.
Excellent. So out in the real world, I mean, I've been wrong about this, so I wanted this to be corrected on camera, but I had made the incorrect assumption that most people write .NET code in C sharp. And I was kind of reminded that, well, that might not necessarily be true, because there's probably a lot of people that write line of business applications in VB.NET.
Yeah, that is.
So I just made that assumption.
Yeah, that's factual. I mean, statistically not true. When we do surveys and such of our population, is about half and half.
Nice.
Yeah, like half people write VB.NET code and half people write C sharp code. I think a lot of that misconception comes from Microsoft having a body language that emphasizes C sharp more than it does VB.NET.
Yeah.
And so people tend to read that as, people write .NET code in C sharp. But that's actually not the case. There are plenty of VB.NET folks out there.
Excellent.
That's a very important part of our customer base, and we are fully committed to them. I mean, it's not.
Absolutely. Let's talk about
and
that.
And the co-evolution plays into that. That's one way to say, hey, we are committed to both of those languages.
Good.
And, yeah.
Because I remember the VB programmers were sort of very upset when we first introduced VB.NET. And so, because it essentially is a different language that has similar syntax.
Yep.
So what have you done to hey, we get that most people who write general purpose programs are writing VB, at least on our platform. At least that's how it used to be, VB6, right?
Yeah, that's
So how are you appeasing them without,
Well, what's done is done. I mean, it's what can I say? I wasn't even here when that happened.
Not.
It's sometime history. In history, there are decisions that cannot be undone.
Yeah.
It's not like we can magically go back and morph what VB.NET is right now to be what VB6 was.
Sure.
And it would be very hard. There are different UI libraries, the old VB6 forms, and the new, WPF and WinForms, and those things are not. There are plenty of issues, but it's a decision for good or bad, a decision that was taken 10 years ago, we did a lot to bring the. And we are still doing a lot to bring VB6 programmer along, and we have, a large amount of documents on the web of how to migrate your VB6 code to .NET, which usually involves some modification to the VB6 code to be type safe, and then some cut and paste or some tools that do this automatically and stuff. And we have plenty of recommendation of things on how to do that.
Yeah.
It's currently not in our plan in any form or fashion to build a kind of a VB6 compatible .NET language.
Sure.
So we are not doing that.
So let's talk about, so we have the big two and then the sort of the younger brother that's now in the fold.
Yes.
When you think about,
other stuff as well, the dynamic languages, I don't know.
You got it.
Yeah.
Do you think about, the chance of maybe we create a new language? So rather than always kind of you add the dynamic word to C sharp, you add functional constructs. So the language gets bigger and bigger, which of course is going to be a problem with compatibility if you had to remove things that weren't being used, etc. Are you thinking about, you ever step back and go, let's create a new language?
First of all, we don't remove things. It's very hard. It's very hard to remove stuff from languages. You're never in a good spot if you do that. But the languages are all our languages are getting big.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, you will need to wonder what's the, you know, if they are close to their final, you know, kind of, all languages have a lifetime, and they're getting close to. It seems there is still space to innovate for some time. Mm. So it's not in any form or fashion in our plans right now to build a new language from scratch. Mm. It is conceivable that that's gonna happen at some point in the future. Not the short term though.
Excellent.
But I mean, you have a good point. I mean, the language is. It is getting bigger, and that brings concern, and the C++ history is a good example of that. And I don't think there is, it's kind of natural for languages to get big. Mm-hmm. You always start small and elegant, and you end up being...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Which is where the notion of DSLs come in, right? Oh, like if C# and VB become DSL hosts, where you have embedded DSLs in them, that could be really interesting. It gives them flexibility.
That's something we are looking at the DSLs and that kind of thing. You have to wonder it's all speculation, right? We don't really know, but it's like in the future the world will be a bunch of small DSL, depending on what you are doing, mm-hmm. or it will be a world of general purpose programming languages as they have been, or some hybrids of those two things.
Yeah.
And the good thing is that we have plenty of the best kind of language thinkers in this group. So I'm kind of rather comfortable with where I sit on that particular one. We'll do a good job of it.
Excellent. So one question I have for you is the compiler level.
Yeah.
C#, and Anders has talked about this publicly and on Channel 9 and stuff, is regardless of the notion of the compiler becoming more of a service.
Yes.
Is that also going to be true for VB?
Oh, indeed. It's whatever we talk about because of our heritage. For example, Anders has been the C# kind of architect for a long time, and some of our team members have been C# team members or VB team members. So sometimes we tend to use to say, you know, C# will do X or VB will do X. Mm. And every time we use those words, what we really mean is that C# and VB or VB and C#, so both together, will do X.
Excellent.
So if sometime myself or some people in our team say something, that's what we really mean.
Yeah.
And so when Anders talks about it, he's talking about both compilers. And indeed, we have both of them right now, in this very moment.
Excellent.
And that's a very important investment for us. We want to make it easy for people to build such DSLs, and also to build, we haven't talked about IDEs much in this discussion, but we want to make it easy for people to customize our IDE, to build all the, you know, the 100 refactorings that we don't have, but the only way for them to do so if we expose our compilers, we let them play with what the representation of the source code looks like. We won't be successful if we tell them, you know, go and parse this file and build your own parser, and that's not a good thing for them. So that's very important, and we're doing it for both.
Excellent.
VB and C#. Yeah.
So we should talk about the IDE, because it's fundamental, it's instrumental to productivity.
Indeed.
So what are some
Well, the IDE, we did many things in Dev10, first of all. First of all, we made it, we call it code focus, which means we did many features that makes your core writing experience easier. Mm. And especially as it relates to test-driven development. So it's very easy now to create a test as to start writing your test and not having the code already written, but as you write your test and you call a method, to quickly generate that method in another class and then go on and create a class. It's a button and generate the class on the other file. So all of those scenarios which are kind of starting with the test that were very difficult in previous releases now are much easier.
Awesome.
And we have very many new things in the IDE. as we look, kind of, we have, you know, we have a new debugging feature. We have a Proteus, which is a big new debugging framework that allows you to kind of step back into your code stack and do kind of like an history of things and look at the state of the program at different points in time. And we have I'm thinking of all the IDE feature. We have a call hierarchy that allows you to look at all the people who called you and the people you are calling into.
Excellent.
We have new quick search capabilities so that you finally can just search for something and see everything that both files, symbols, and everything that respects that pattern of words. Mm. So we did plenty of features. And one of the big areas of investment in the future will be the extensibility of it. Mm. So letting people do all these things instead of us being the ones who build all these features, let the community take charge and innovate there. And that ties in with the compiler as a service kind of effort that Anders has been talking about.
Excellent. Huh?
Yeah.
And so for the dynamic languages, one of the things that Anders talks about when we have the sort of tired kind of static versus dynamic argument, which we had at lang.net again.
Oh, we did?
Yeah.
We're never going to agree.
Is the notion of, you know, with the statically typed, that design time, you have a sort of a rich kind of, you know, inspection and understanding of the objects you're programming against. So the IDE makes it really easy for you to kind of infer. You don't really have to infer, it's explicit. Now for the dynamic languages, you have to do like inference. It's a little bit more complex.
Yes.
How does that work?
I think that there is I was talking today with a guy who uses VI to write code instead of Visual Studio. And he claims that by using VI is the lack of intelligence and of these things makes him remember things better. It makes him a better program. So on that particular topic, you have such a variety of opinion.
Sure.
Goes from completely crazy to slightly crazy to, you know, to sane things. Yeah, but it's both things, both opinions have merit. And that's the good thing about languages, that you can... And they kind of accommodate the way that you think, and you end up gravitating toward languages that are more similar to the way that you do things.
Absolutely.
That's. I don't think I answered your question, but I don't think there is an answer.
There is no answer
to that particular one.
Totally, it's tough, and each camp has their own answer, and you can't actually have an IDE for dynamic languages. I mean, if you're writing Iron Python or Iron Ruby, you have an IDE, Visual Studio.
Indeed, and I don't know, the way that I think about it, again, I'm a very pragmatic guy, and sometimes I do need a dynamic feature. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, say I'm loading, I'm loading a CSV file, comma separated file. Right, and the first line of this file is the title of the column, and then there are all the values, like a little table, right? Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it be nice to then go and say, all right, my thing that loaded the file dot and have the name of the column there, instead of putting it in some form of strings with get value,
sure.
And that's a natural place where a dynamic language it's. You know, excels in that scenario. And there are many other scenarios like this. So whenever I write code, if I end up in a scenario where dynamic things are needed, I'm happy that I get them. It's sharp. But it's not like I'm always thinking in my mind, should I be dynamic or static? Depending on, you know, it really depends on what you are doing.
Absolutely.
And I know it's always easy to answer that way. It depends on what you're doing, but it's more often true.
Absolutely. So. And the dynamic keyword is a static type.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's really... one of the cool things you guys are doing, right? You're sort of marrying the extremes into something that's general purpose.
Think about that. In C#, now you can declare a variable. That will scare you as well. Mm. You can declare as variable as with the name of the type... and then the variable. Or you can say var, and let the compiler infer the type. Or you can say dynamic, and then the compiler doesn't even infer the type. and you can do all of these things in a single kind of programming language.
Exactly.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that with VB you could have done this a long time ago.
Cool. Excellent. So let's talk a little bit about, I mean, how long have you been in this role?
As the GPM of Samsung, I don't actually remember the exact dates. It might be a couple of years or 1 year or so.
Excellent.
Something like that.
And your background as a programmer?
Oh, my background. So before, I'm always been an object-oriented guy. When I started, I'm almost 40 now, so a very long time ago, I was a C++ programmer, then I became a Java programmer, and then I've been hired from Microsoft 10 years ago, and I started with .NET, C#, and all those languages. As before being in the language team, I worked on Object Spaces, which was an object relational technology in the SQL team that never shipped, but it formed kind of the basis for what Link to SQL is right now. So then when I joined the language team, I kind of was representing the object relational camp, if you wish. And then I stick around because I so enjoyed kind of working here. So.
Sure. And you're one of the many Italians at Microsoft.
Right. One of the few Italians.
One of the few? There's a fair amount of you, man.
There are some of us, some of us. Not as many as Indian folks or Chinese or other ethnic groups, but there are, I think I know all of them, so there must be.
So you know Vittorio then?
The longer fellow.
That's cool. And Paolo is a. Paolo, what's his last? I can't remember his last
Severin.
Name. Well, he's a Niner. He's on the Windows search team, right? Desktop search. Paolo Marcucci or something like that.
Yeah, we have...
Who he is.
We have this old mafia thing.
You guys are
all, all across mafia.
Totally. You're all in
controlling the company, yes.
You got it.
Few people.
The headquarters are in Sicily, right?
Yes. Yes.
And
we decide all of what the Microsoft
what really
does.
Goes on.
Which I hope Steve Bannon watches this.
Yeah, I hope he does. Hey, Steve.
There you go.
But, hey, thanks for your time. I know you're really
thank
busy.
You, sir.
It's really good to, sort of get a perspective of, because we get a lot of times really caught up in the actual language itself. You have to step outside the box and look at reality.
Yeah, I don't know if, even if in my position it might be easy to say that, but I don't get fully these religious language wars that go on.
Yeah,
it's all languages have good things. You can build most things with all of them, and then it's just a syntax different that you kind of learn. F# is slightly, it has a bit, is different in some sense. But even the kind of code that you write in F#, you can write it in VB or C#. It's slightly more verbose, but it's not like earth shattering,
Sure. So, very cool. Excellent. Well, hey, thank you for your time, Luca.
Thank you.
Great to meet you.
Great to meet you.